All right, welcome to Ask the Editor, presented by the Journal of Athletic Training, the official journal of the National Athletic Trainers Association. My name is Chris Coons, and I'm the Associate Editor for Digital Applications. I'm going to be hosting tonight's event. The purpose of the event is that we want to make the Journal of Athletic Training more accessible to clinicians and to readers and researchers who are considering publishing in the Journal of Athletic Training. And in order to do that, tonight we've got the new editor-in-chief of the Journal of Athletic Training, Dr. Jay Hurdle, available to answer questions or give advice about the current state of the Journal of Athletic Training, future initiatives at the Journal of Athletic Training, or how to better position your work to be in the Journal of Athletic Training, really anything that you may have questions or need advice about. In order to make tonight's event work more smoothly, if you're going to ask questions, if you're on Facebook Live, we'd like you to ask those questions in the comments section. That sounds easy enough. And on Twitter, it would be great if you could tweet at the JAT_NATA Twitter handle using the hashtag AskTheEditor, all one word. If you do that, we've got some folks who are going to aggregate those questions, and hopefully we'll be able to get them to Dr. Hurdle as smoothly as possible. At this point, I'd like to introduce Dr. Jay Hurdle and give him an opportunity to make some opening remarks before we start getting to questions. So, Jay, do you have anything to say to the readership and to researchers out there?
Great. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for all your work in helping to coordinate tonight's session. And I definitely want to thank everybody for tuning in and joining us tonight. I'm definitely excited to have taken over as the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Athletic Training. I think that we're in a good spot, and definitely want to acknowledge Craig Deniger for his 6 years as the editor-in-chief of JAT, and he just wound up things in June. And I'm excited to see where we can take the Journal of Athletic Training. And one of the things that I'm definitely most excited about is taking JAT's content beyond just a PDF of the articles we publish. So we definitely are trying to do a lot of efforts around social media, but also other content such as this, such as a podcast series that we're developing, and definitely want to give readers the opportunity to interact with the content, with authors, with editors in different ways.
Great, Jay. That's a great start. I'm happy to be able to help with some of those digital and social initiatives.
I think it's all of them, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. It's been a fun ride so far. I hope it stays that way. And so over the last few days, we've reached out to readers and to some young researchers who are interested in Journal of Athletic Training or publishing in Journal of Athletic Training for some questions. And so while we're waiting for the audience that's watching now, you can kind of use some of those questions to get a jumping off point for our conversation. So one of the most common questions that we commonly hear, especially from younger researchers who are interested in publishing in the Journal of Athletic Training, is where do you see areas of interest or areas for growth in content going? Are there specific areas of scientific literature or scientific research that the JAT is interested in seeing more submissions of?
Yeah, well, I think that we're interested in all aspects of athletic training. Definitely clinical papers are going to be a priority. So when we take a look at the types of pathologies, you know, we certainly don't say, we want, more of any particular content. We want to make sure that from a pathology standpoint that we're hitting areas that are important to the clinical practice of athletic training. I do think, as I've looked at things, we get a lot of papers about concussion, ACL, and ankle instability. Those three areas are the three topics that we get the most on. And there are some clinical areas, tendinopathies, muscle injuries come to mind that we don't see as much of. So would I like to see more in those areas? Yes, but you know, we're not necessarily going to go out and solicit those or anything like that. And then I think also thinking about clinical domains in terms of prevention, assessment, treatment, that all of those areas, you know, we would welcome content in those areas, as well as on the administration side, the public health side, the education side, professional development. We're interested in all that content.
Great. Something that I think people have noticed recently is that there's been several publications in the area of injury prediction analytics or injury outcome analytics, more professional sport or college sport based.
Right.
You know, things that are not non-traditional or don't have a place in JAT, but just aren't things that have, it's kind of a new frontier. And I'm just wondering where you see that area being positioned in the Journal of Athletic Training. Is that an area of growth or how do you feel about that type of research becoming more common in the journal?
Right, I definitely think it will become more common because I think more researchers and clinicians are doing that type of thing on a daily basis. And whether that is, you know, looking at sensor-based activities like, you know, accelerometry, like catapult systems, where you might have a team that is collecting that information on a daily basis as part of their training regimen, or whether it is things that might be out of a publicly available database, like we saw with a recent paper that was published dealing with NBA players and, you know, matching up publicly available injury information along with performance data that that the league itself makes public. So I think, you know, all of those are areas that we'll see more of, and I'm definitely open to that. And, you know, a big part of it is because I think that's also a direction that clinical practice is heading. You know, you're definitely seeing that at the professional sports level, and you know, it's moving into college sports and it'll be in the high schools before you know it.
Great. So another common question that we've heard are, I think people have noticed some of the social media efforts that we've started to implement, but above and beyond that, non-social media related, are there outreach efforts or other efforts that you're hoping to make in order to make the content from Journal of Athletic Training more accessible or more applicable directly to clinicians?
Right. So, you know, I think on the accessibility side of things, we're an all open access journal. So our content is free to everybody. So anybody can go to natajournals.org and the Journal of Athletic Training is listed right on top there. And you can access all of our articles there. So, you know, that is definitely available and for the use there. What was the rest of your question?
I think just are there potential efforts at either active dissemination or ways to reach out to clinicians to make sure that information is getting in front of them? And I think some of that might bleed over into social media. So, I mean, I think it's probably okay to talk about specific things that you're planning on doing, but, you know, just ways to get clinician eyes in front of things.
So one of the things that we definitely want to encourage athletic trainers and other interested readers in is to subscribe to our table of contents alerts. So if you go to that natajournals.org site, you can register for table of contents alerts. And what that does is every month when a new issue comes out, the table of contents will be emailed to you. So I think that's a great way. You know, we've definitely heard from, you know, some people who say, oh, I want the print edition to come back. It's not coming back. I don't see any situation where that happens. And they say, well, I feel like I need, if I don't have it in front of me, then it's like it's not there. But what we're trying to encourage people to do is to do the table of contents alerts. They can also follow us on social media, on Twitter and Facebook, and new articles will be released there with links directly to them. And then I think we'll also be trying to do, you know, figure out some other ways that we can interact with different constituencies as well to try to promote that.
Yeah, that sounds great. It's, I think, an evolving area. We're not 100% sure what the right approach is, but we're going to try a bunch of different ones and see what works best for the most people.
Yeah, well, and I think that, you know, different people do it different ways. You know, so you have some people who, you know, might be digital natives and they're super comfortable with Twitter as being a means of professional communication, whereas you might have others who aren't there. So I think, you know, we'll try to offer different ways for people to do it. Another potential way that people can do it too is they can go to PubMed, PubMed.com, which is run by the government, National Institutes of Health, and National Library of Medicine, and they can sign up for an account. It's free, and then they can actually perform a weekly or a monthly search that's done automatically, and they could just do that on Journal of Athletic Training, mm-hmm. and you know, every week the new abstracts would show up in their inbox. So there's a lot of different ways that people can do it.
I have to be honest, that's the way I access Journal of Athletic Training. I don't actually do table of contents updates. I find the PubMed search to be a much easier way for me to do it because I get daily or weekly updates instead.
Right. Yeah, and you know, one thing with that, you know, with the social media and with the PubMed is we do have most of our papers come online prior to actually being placed in an issue, mm-hmm. so you do get the new information a little bit quicker.
Great. A question just came in that I think is a pretty good one based on the fact that we've recently just, your editorial just came out and we also have updated our banners everywhere to say all in for top 10. And so we're wondering kind of what do you perceive the biggest barriers to getting us back up in the top 10 to be at this point? So if you wanted to provide a little context about all in for top 10 and then maybe talk about some of the barriers that you think are in place.
Sure. So the, you know, all in for the top 10 is basically designed to be a quality improvement initiative. And, you know, anybody who's ever taken a class with me knows that I say you can't manage what you don't measure. And measuring, you know, the impact or the quality of an academic journal is subject of much debate. But, you know, I think the most common way that is done is with impact factors, which are really based on citation numbers, how often a journal's published papers are cited. So that's what we're going to use as our metric. And when we look at that, I think the biggest barriers is that there's some good journals in front of us, and you know they're not going to be actively trying to move down those rankings. But what I would really like to see is a big push for athletic trainers who are in the research environment submitting their best work to the Journal of Athletic Training. And I think right now, there are times when that doesn't happen. And I'm not calling out any individuals by name. I'll admit to even myself that we've had papers out of my lab that, you know, I've chosen to not go to JAT, but maybe to go to a higher ranked journal for, you know, various reasons. But what we want to do is to try to really encourage athletic training scholars to submit their best work to JAT.
Excellent. I think kind of along that lines, so a question came in asking about, in comparison to some other top tier journals, which have started to restrict the study design or study designs that they'll actually publish. So they'll desk reject anything that's not level 2A or level 2B evidence or about above. And you know, they sort of self-limit them, the content of the journal to RCTs or other high level designs. Do you see JAT at some point moving to a more selective approach to study design, or are there other ways to improve quality without moving to an auto-reject model like that?
Right. Yeah, I would be very surprised if we ever made a decision to say we're not going to publish a certain type of paper or a certain type of design ever. I think that's short-sighted because, you know, you can say something like a case study is, you know, not a high level of evidence, but there are some case studies that need to be shared and can have a lot of impact clinically. And I think that's important to think about. So I don't think we'll be doing that, but at the same time, I think we have to make sure that we're publishing papers that advance the scientific understanding and or the clinical practice of athletic training in sports medicine. So if there are papers that are submitted that are, a design about doing a therapeutic intervention, but it's done on healthy people, that's not going to be a high priority in most cases for us. Now, if there was some, novel measurement that advanced theory or something like that, the possibility is there. But, what I really want to see is research papers that involve injured or other pathological populations, whether that be from a prevention, an assessment, or an intervention perspective.
Great. So for young scholars or potentially clinicians who have not previously been able to do so, who are interested in potentially becoming a reviewer or becoming more involved with the journal in some way, what advice do you have for them? What's the mechanism to be able to do that? How can someone get involved with the journal if they want to?
Sure. So from a reviewer standpoint, they should go to the NATA journals page, and I believe that there is a link there to sign up for to join the reviewer database. If that's not correct, you can email me directly at jhurdle@virginia.edu, and I will make sure that you get the right link to that. So I think that you can go right to the journal page to do that. And when you're there sign up, they ask you to identify your areas of expertise. And what we really want there is for people to select a few areas that they have expertise in. And usually we're looking at, probably between like 3 to 6 areas. And then when we get papers that come in those areas, you'll be considered as a potential reviewer for that. The other thing that I would also encourage people to do is to, communicate with myself or with other associate editors who are going to be selecting the reviewers, and let us know directly about your interest as well, because that name recognition and things like that will help when we're making those selections.
Great. Now, for a clinician who wants to be a reviewer, I think because we're such a clinically relevant journal that often it's interesting to see the balance between researchers and clinicians who are involved. Does the journal seek clinicians to serve as reviewers on papers? Is that something that happens regularly, or is it a kind of special circumstance, or how does it?
I think it happens quite often. And when if a clinician wanted to be a reviewer and join the database, select the areas. I mean, the topics that we list, include specific pathologies. They include specific populations. That might include like running injuries, throwing injuries, as well as different anatomical parts or therapeutic aspects like manual therapy or other things like that. So yeah, there's definitely the opportunities there.
Excellent. So a lot of journals have moved to submission fees, page fees, publication fees. I mean, there's any number if you can name it, it's a fee that someone will charge you to try to publish an article at this point. And from a subscription fee perspective, it seems like subscription fees for some publication companies and some publications have continued to increase. What's the general at this point? Obviously, we can't predict 5 years in the future, but currently, what's the attitude around both subscription side fees and publication side fees?
Right. So the subscription fees right now, basically the NATA, National Athletic Trainers Association, funds the open access for the journal. And we've been, quite adamant about keeping it that way. And not having subscription fees for students or athletic trainers or people that are interested in our content, wherever they may be. One of the things that I think that has done is it has improved the international reach of the journal tremendously, because we don't have subscription fees or paywalls or anything like that. You know, anybody can access our content. And, you know, interestingly, last year, 45% of visitors to the Journal of Athletic Training webpage were international. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, that's a great service that the NATA is providing to the sports medicine community worldwide. In terms of, you know, on the author side, for either submission fees or publication fees, I do not see that happening in the near future at all. It is something that we have discussed in the past, but at this point, there are no concrete plans to implement those.
Okay, great. Are there any upcoming either special issues or series of papers that you're especially interested in or excited about or think that the public should know about so they can kind of keep an eye out for them as they're coming?
Right, absolutely. So we do have a series of papers coming out on injury epidemiology that will actually, the first two of those papers are actually available ahead of print online right now, and we'll start the series with the next issue of JAT. But what's really unique about this injury epidemiology series is that it includes data from both high school and intercollegiate athletes. Oh, yeah. So the Rio database, which is the kind of gold standard for high school interscholastic sports injuries, and then the NCAA injury surveillance system. What we've done with about 14 sports is to put papers together. So for example, we'll have a paper on football that will have both high school and college data, 10 years worth of data, injury epidemiology data on each sport. And then we'll have, you know, other sports, you know, separate paper for men's soccer and women's soccer, men's basketball, women's basketball, et cetera. So those will be coming out over about the next 6 or 7 months. So we're excited about that. We do have three other thematic issues in the works. We have one on public health in athletic training, and that one is being headed up by the group out at Oregon State with Mark Hoffman and Mark Norcross and Sam Johnson. We have a ankle sprain and instability issue that I've been heavily involved with, and so have some of our other associate editors like Pat McKeon and Philip Gribble and a few other people. And then we also have a special issue coming out, or that's in development right now, on youth sports specialization, which Dave Bell from the University of Wisconsin is heading up.
Jay, so one question that I'm actually curious about a little bit, and I've gotten from some junior faculty and other young researchers in the field, is about the submission process, the submission guidelines, and then time from submission till maybe not so much on the review side, but towards proofs and publication, you know, sort of making the process more efficient at JAT. Often authors have said that it feels like it's longer than it should be, and there's probably a million reasons for that, and we don't need to go into the past about why that may have been, but more, what are some steps in the near future that you're hoping to take that will streamline the process a bit and hopefully make it more attractive to younger authors?
Sure. So on the post-acceptance side of things, so, you know, the time from manuscript acceptance to publication, we definitely did have a pretty substantial backlog develop. Last November, the NATA Board of Directors approved a funding request that Craig Denninger put together to basically increase our editorial capabilities to improve or to have more people working on the post-approval manuscript submission or manuscript production side of things. Mm-hmm. So we are in the process of working that backlog down, and we should be on pace to have that backlog eliminated, hopefully by the end of this calendar year. And at that point going forward, we're looking at a goal of 35 days from manuscript acceptance to first online publication, and that would include being put up on PubMed. That's where we're headed with that. So I feel good about what we're doing on that front. I do know that, you know, some publishers like Elsevier are a lot faster than that, but they are also, a multi-million-dollar corporation that nothing is free there. So, you know, that you're not going to have open access and things like that. That the authors are paying for that, or the subscribers are paying for that service. On the review side of things, one thing that we are in the process of doing is we've previously asked reviewers to submit their reviews within 21 days. We are shifting that to 14 days. And, basically what other journals have found is that when someone agrees to submit a paper, when they agree to review a paper, the average number of days until they submit the review is exactly whatever you tell them. Mm-hmm. So that if, other journals have shown this where they went from 21 to 14 days, literally their average time to review being submitted went from 21 days to 14 days. So, that'll help, a week, which doesn't sound like a lot, but in the grand scheme of things, I think it does make a difference. On the submission side, we are in the process of revamping our submission guidelines. I would anticipate that those will probably be released hopefully about October 1st or so. And it should help streamline the process with that and make it easier for authors on the submission end.
With respect, you had mentioned earlier the addition of current concepts articles or sort of clinical concept articles that'll be in development. And so I guess the questions are sort of around, like, what types of topics do you envision? Do you have someone who's going to be sort of pitching ideas to individuals? Like, how are these going to be identified and shepherded into that journal?
Right. Yeah. So Terry Grindstaff from Creighton University is going to be leading that initiative. And he and I have been working to develop a list of potential topics. The topics are, going to be clinical in nature. And what we really see them is as concise state of the science, state of clinical practice articles, and that they could either be on topics that are pathology related. So, that you might have a paper on Achilles tendinopathy or lateral epicondylitis or something like that. But that, basically these papers we'd have one that would appear in each issue, and that it would give a review of the epidemiology, the etiology of these conditions, and then go through, best practices of assessment, treatment, prevention, depending on what the focus is. So we'll kind of have some of them will be pathology papers, but then we might also have papers that are based on a certain treatment approach that, might be based on, a clinical update on cryotherapy or joint mobilizations or things like that. Primarily those papers are going to be solicited by us, but as we roll that out, if people have, self-nominations to make, they can contact myself or Terry directly. Those first publications probably will not be coming out until next calendar year. And I'm not sure if they'll be right at the beginning or not.
Sure. Yeah. Those types of things take a little while to cultivate and develop and make sure that they're of the quality that we want them to be. So that makes sense. It's going to be a little while before those roll.
Right. But what I want with those papers too, though, is that I want the clinical athletic trainer to be able to open every issue and say, there's at least one article in here that speaks directly to me that, you know, doesn't take an experimental design approach or statistics and things like that, but says, here's something that's common clinically, and here's what the current state of the science and the clinical practice is.
Sure. Some journals have gone to really media rich or accessible supplemental materials, you know, that are submitted or associated with given papers. Like in those papers, if there was a specific clinical technique that was recommended, there may be a video or, you know, an image photo shoot kind of thing of a clinician actually utilizing the technique so that you could, you know, not have to build a mental image, but instead kind of just see what it is. Does JAT have plans to integrate that type of, or solicit that type of material along with papers that it would do well for it to be included with?
Yes, absolutely. So we have a few papers that we published right now that have had some online supplemental material in them, and that's the way what we would envision with these types of things. But absolutely, we're going to be encouraging authors to submit supplemental material, which could be, you know, kind of traditional scientific writing things, like it could just be additional figures or tables, but definitely videos of intervention techniques or, you know, measurement protocols and things like that. Absolutely, we're going to encourage that. And even things like, you know, sharing data sets and sharing statistical code and things like that, we're open to all of that. And I think that, you know, you're kind of seeing this open science approach in some aspects of academic publishing right now. We want to make sure that, you know, we don't miss the boat on that one.
Sure. So the last question we have from the viewers is, one way that journals have been able to quickly improve their impact factor or their citation rates or whatever metric you'd like to use is by publishing more position statements or consensus statements in the journal. I think that there's some journals that pop out in probably both of our heads that, you know, it seems like every month there's a consensus statement that's available. Yeah. Are there plans to either update our National Athletic Trainers Association position statements more regularly so that they can be published more regularly in JAT, or potentially expand the slate of either position or consensus statements that we're seeking to publish in the journal?
Sure. So in terms of the NATA position statements, you know, that is not a conversation I've had with anybody. So the pronouncements committee is an independent entity within the NATA. So NATA journals and the pronouncements committee, we cooperate to publish the position statements, but the journal is not involved in deciding which ones, you know, which topics are developed or things like that. So I can't answer that question. I do know that we have a few that there's a position statement on patellofemoral pain that's coming. There's another position statement on work-life balance in athletic training that those should both be released within the next 6 months. Those papers are widely read. They are by far our most widely read papers, probably our most widely cited papers as well. So we definitely value them for both of those things. In terms of, you know, other consensus papers, you know, a lot of times if the NATA gets involved, like in an inter association task force or something like that, we lobby to be the place that those get published. But again, if individuals have different consensus papers that they're working on with different groups, please contact us and inquire about the possibility of doing that.
Great. I lied. There's one more. Then I promise we'll cut it before the dog gets up. And so the question is that several journals, when they've started doing current concept type articles like the ones that you've proposed, have used those as an opportunity to do either count or point counterpoint type articles or clinical debate type articles among clinicians and scholars who have rival viewpoints or you know, approach a scientific problem from an opposite perspective. Is that something that you think the journal would be open to incorporating at some point? Or is the idea really that it's a synthesis of best current evidence from a kind of unbiased, or, well, bias might be the wrong word, but I think you understand what I'm saying, perspective?
Yeah, I had not thought of that before. I do think that we want to offer clear recommendations where we can, but I'm open to all kinds of ideas. So if there's somebody that wants to talk about that with me, I just let's start a conversation about it.
Absolutely. Okay, so that's really it for questions for tonight. Do you have anything else that you want to make viewers or readership aware of before we call it an evening?
No, I just want to encourage people, if they have enjoyed participating in any of the live events we've had, whether they've been the Twitter JT chats, whether they've been the live events we've tried the last couple months here, please spread the word among your colleagues about them, and encourage your athletic training colleagues and students and any other sports medicine professionals to follow our social media accounts on Twitter or Facebook, and to sign up for table of contents alerts or a regular PubMed notification when we publish new content.